Hey, Deep Fried fans. It's summertime and you know what that means. No? Well, fried green tomatoes, of course. They're in season, so head down to your local farmer's market and pick some up. Oh yeah, and don't forget the remoulade sauce. This is Ellie Mae here, and I'm going to announce show number 5, recorded live on Monday, June 30th, 2008. Today's show is sponsored by Redgate Software. First-class developers insist on knowing how their code performs before releasing their application into the wild. Ants Profiler from Redgate Software is a very easy-to-use profiler for .NET developers that will help you identify any performance bottlenecks before you ship. Using Ants Profiler gives you that extra edge, since you can fix any known issues before shipping and before anyone notices anything. Ants Profiler can be a lifesaver, so if you want to get your hands on it, download a 14-day free trial from http://red-gate.com. Today, Keith and Woody sit down with James Avery and Leon Gersey to discuss writing .NET software on a Mac? Wait, did I read that correctly? A Mac? Well, I hope they can still deploy their DLLs into the GAC and strong sign assemblies. I guess we'll find out, won't we? Okay, Deep Fried fans, sit back, relax, grab that glass of sweet tea, and get ready for some Gumpology.
Hey, folks, welcome back to another episode of Deep Fried Bites. My man Woody, how are you, sir?
I am excellent. How about you?
Well, I'm doing great. Probably not as good as you are, because I hear you are now a Microsoft MVP, sir.
Oh, yeah. Yep, I got the award July 1st, so that was great news.
Congratulations, sir, and I'm reading that in the most sincere way.
Okay, well, you're making me blush. Let's get on with the show, okay?
All right. Today's show, we're going to talk about something a little bit off-center. We're going to talk about doing .NET software development. Now, while that topic isn't very off-center, we're going to talk about doing .NET development on a Mac, specifically using OS X. So how do you do that? What do you need? And so on and so forth. Well, we've got two guys that are expert .NET developers waiting in the wings here, and they're going to tell us how. So it should be a really interesting show. It's sort of one of those show ideas that people are actually doing this, but not a lot of people are talking about it publicly. So Deep Fried Bites is bringing it out in the open so we can talk about it. Woody, tell us about our guest today.
Okay. Hey, James Avery is a founder and owner of InfoZerk Incorporated, which runs a lounge advertising and network and provides .NET and Ruby consulting. James has been working with .NET since 2001 and has been a web developer since 1996. He has written books for Microsoft Press, Rocks, and O'Reilly Press. James has written articles for MSDN Magazine and Dr. Dobbs, most recently doing a 3-month stint writing the Toolbox column in MSDN Magazine. James is a MVP for Microsoft, ASP Insider, and has spoken at a number of user groups and conferences. Leon Gersing is a .NET developer with Telligent Systems on the Community Server product team. He has 8 years' experience as a Microsoft developer and is an advocate of agile principles, test-driven development, open source, and the C, Sharp, and Ruby languages. Leon lives in Dayton with his wife, 2 daughters, 2 cats, and 4 computers. Leon runs the development blog FallenRogue.com and is addicted to Twitter and red pandas. Hey guys, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
I'm doing wonderful.
Hey guys, that's great. I'm glad you guys all could make it for this interview. And hey Leon, let's get started with you. How'd you get started with the Mac?
I got started basically when they decided to launch the Intel line. I said, oh, wait a minute, now I'm interested. They didn't necessarily announce at that time that there was going to be a way to dual boot or even tri-boot, if you want to throw Linux on there as well, or virtualize, but I just knew that it was going to happen. So I kind of watched it for a couple of months, and then as soon as they had those new iMacs, I pretty much jumped right on it.
Cool. How about you, James?
Well, I'm actually a little more of a newer convert. I've been using it for about a year, and I actually got started because I wanted to work a little bit more with Ruby and Rails, and it just works a lot better on a Mac than it does on a PC. And I was actually already doing all of my .NET development in a VM on a PC, so for me it was really easy to switch and just keep working in a VM and then just happen to be on Mac instead of on a PC.
So, James, on that topic of VM, so you were you were already going down the path of virtualizing your development stack, and then whenever you wanted to move over to the Mac, you just essentially just copy those same VMs over, or did you have to reinstall or what?
Actually, I was using VM Workstation on a PC, and I had different VMs for different clients and stuff like that. And so when I went to a Mac, I actually got VMware Fusion, and I just copied them right over. So I didn't have to recreate the VMs. I just copied them over, which is – it's been great for other things, too. If you're sharing with, you know, PC devs, you can just send them your VM, and it'll work.
That's an awesome story. All right, so let's go back to you, Leon. You said you were kind of considering it for a while, right? I mean, why were you considering it? I mean, what was really driving your thought process there?
Well, I would say that it wasn't necessarily my development experience in Windows. I've been making money from people who want Windows applications for a very long time, and I love that aspect of it. Unfortunately, working with my wife, my family, and friends, and on our existing XP box that just kept getting slower and slower and slower and slower. Over time, I think we were running, you know, one hardware firewall, one software firewall, one antivirus, one virus scan. We had so many things clouding that Wintel box that I just couldn't service them anymore. For me, it was a maintenance nightmare to deal with that XP box and them. And they wanted a lot of you know, home specific programs, like you know, imaging programs, making little movies out of the videos and whatnot. And part of that was the hardware of the time. Part of it was the operating system. Part of it was just there wasn't. We didn't like a lot of the apps that you could buy to do that, to make that complete on Windows. And I had heard so many great things about what OS X was offering and what iLife was offering from a consumer standpoint, that coupled with the options of possibly dual booting the machine and be able to do my my Windows development on the same box, I was like, well, all right, that's very appealing to me. So for me, it was decidedly from that perspective. But like James as well, like I do a lot of SharePoint development, and SharePoint development has traditionally been a lot of VM development. So I had an easy out anyway. So if there was virtualization, I had virtualization. I could plug that into.
Yeah, but don't you guys really suggest virtualization even for people who aren't moving to the Mac and who are just primarily hardware, I mean PC users?
Oh, yeah. I mean, 100%. If you're doing development, you should have a VM just because it's so easy to install something beta, roll it back, have a fresh copy so you're never working on an old stale copy of Windows, and then your machine copy of Windows doesn't get all slow and messed up because you're not installing that much on it.
Let's back up a little bit. You guys, Leon, you work for a company called Telligent, and that shop is all .NET. James, you're a Microsoft MVP. You've been doing .NET for a long time as well. So you guys are literally running Macs day in and day out, big time fans, it sounds like. And you're doing .NET development, and it sounds like you're still productive doing it.
I find that I'm a little more productive. I don't know if it's the hardware configuration that Mac puts out or if it's the way that Unix is handling memory from the host OS to the virtual OS. But I find that my current gen iMac, or it's like two gens back iMac, it's a Core Duo, one of the first Core Duo machines that they released. It's not the Core 2 Duo, so it's a 32-bit architecture machine. It's like a 1.83 gigahertz processor. And I think it's a 54 RPM, 5400 RPM, 250 gigabyte hard drive. Actually runs faster than my current Dell laptop that has twice the hardware. I don't know why. I don't know if that's perceived. Now, I haven't done benchmarks to go against one or the other, but I can say that while doing that development in the virtual machine on my Mac, stability is not an issue. Locking is not an issue. One processor that's running that's dedicated to the virtual machine Never seems to hang while I'm using the other processor that's dedicated to the host machine. I find it to be a much better experience overall.
James, anything to add to that?
No, I have to completely agree. I think that my VMs are faster than, I had a pretty top of the line Alienware that was a little bit worse in hardware than my current Mac, but the speed difference is, it seems a lot faster on the Mac. I think part of that might be because you can keep Windows so clean. You remember every time, if you install Windows XP on the oldest machine you have, it will seem so fast for that first month. And then it just goes downhill from there. If you install, everything. And you don't have to do that when you have a dedicated VM that's your development machine. You have Visual Studio, SQL Server, 5 other applications, 10 other applications installed, but you're not installing printer drivers, you're not installing WoW, and stuff like that that's going to make it slow down.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, James, but I also have like that base dev snapshot in my VM, and it's like anytime I want to try something new, I want to mess with something, I actually go from that hard disk. So I just spawn a new one, and I have no problem whatsoever keeping those VMs light and tight and really fast and responsive.
Yeah, I do. I have a benchmark one as well. Or I guess not benchmark, baseline.
So, guys, how much RAM do you guys have in your machines? I'm just interested in knowing.
4 gigs.
4 gigs. I actually have I had 1.5 for a very long time, and I just recently moved to 2. And it's still faster than my other machine, which has 4 gigs in it.
Somebody said 4 gigs. Well, that's you, James?
Yeah, mine has 4 gigs, and that way I can dedicate 2 gigs to the VM, which just makes it fly.
I usually find like on Windows, if I give a VM like between 1.5 and 1 gigs of memory, it works better than if I give if I give the VM 2 gigs on Windows. That it seems like it slows it down more.
I've seen that too.
Huh? Maybe
I don't know why.
I might have to try that.
Probably, are you using? Sorry, I apologize.
Okay.
I find that to be the case depending on what operating system I'm using. So if I'm using Windows Server 2003 R2 Enterprise Edition, I can throw more RAM at it, and it's very happy to take it. Whereas when my XP ones really just want one, and that's about it. I don't really know why.
Well, let's talk about VMs for a second. We've been throwing around VMs like it's chocolate cake over here. So let's clarify for the audience. VM stands for virtual machine. It's a virtualization technology. And somebody, I think, already had mentioned VMware. There's a couple ways to do .NET development on a Mac. And most people talk about three different things. One called Bootcamp, one called Parallels, and one called VMware. So, Leon, take the Bootcamp and just kind of explain what the scenario of people using Bootcamp on a Mac is and sort of how that works and what your experience with that is.
Sure. Bootcamp is actually just a simple partition on your actual hard drive that allows you to dual boot the OS. So you actually have to power down OS X and then power up Windows or Linux or whatever you want to dual boot into the second partition. It's great. You get native hardware use. You get native speeds. So if you were doing, video game programming or something, you might want to go that route. With maybe a Mac Pro or something. But the downside is that you really have to remember that at that point it is a Windows machine. So if something goes wrong and something goes wrong with, like, say, your hard disk or you get a virus or something like that, you could potentially mess up a section of your hard disk. So you have to take into consideration. It is a full-blown XP machine or Win machine, excuse me.
And you have to... You have to actually do a different partition for it as well, right?
That is absolutely correct. You must have a separate partition for it that is allocated just to your to Windows. That said, it is very good, it's very effective, and it's free with the OS. So if you're looking to get started or you just want to try it out and maybe you've got a copy of an operating system that you can install, just make a 32-gigabyte partition, which it will do for you. Through the UI, and just load it up.
You know, it seems a lot of developers I've seen carrying Macs around that I know are .NET developers, they're actually booting into Windows Vista or Windows of some flavor. And so that's basically how they're doing it. They're running Bootcamp on the machine.
Right. There's definitely a lot of those guys who basically they're buying the Mac for the hardware. Because if you look at a MacBook Pro, you really can't find a PC laptop that is the same quality, that's as light, that works as well and is as powerful. I mean, maybe a ThinkPad, but I don't think so. So, I mean, you do get a, you get the breed of .NET developer who they're buying the Mac for the hardware and then just running Vista on it.
And in those scenarios, boot camp is built in, it works, they can just make a partition, install Windows, boot into it. If they want to go back to OS X, they can boot back in either one then.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, there's also a thing that's been talked about called Parallels, which is another way to do virtualization. Leon, I think you've used that as well. Tell us about the Parallels experience.
I think I've used just about any virtualization / partitioning you can use.
Virtualization.
.star, exactly. Any way you can run Windows on a Mac, I think I've tried to do it. Parallels was first out of the gate. So a lot of people that were looking to try having that virtualization experience on the Mac downloaded and started using Parallels. And Parallels actually did a really good job of having a nice beta service so that anything that wasn't quite there. So if you didn't have drivers available to you, that was a problem for a while. Peripherals weren't working. Your iSight camera didn't work in the first couple of versions. Then you could download the nightly builds. If you had already paid for it, you could download the nightly builds and check it out. I had a considerable amount of issues with it, and I was going back and forth between Parallels and Bootcamp, trying to decide if it was even worth it. I still had a Dell, too, so I was still using that on the side. But Parallels, for me, I abandoned it as soon as I heard that VMware had an offering coming out called VMware Fusion.
Which brings us to VMware now at this point. So, James, give us your story with VMware and how that's working. And I know that you've done a lot of VM setups. I have as well. So give us that experience, that story, how it works, how integrated is it, and so on.
If you've used VMware on a PC, the VMware on a Mac is very similar. Like I said, I just copied my VMs over from my PC and they worked right away. So from that standpoint, it's exactly the same as what you use on a PC. You can configure it. You can configure your hardware. I know that VMware kind of leapfrogged Parallels a little bit with some of their support. Like, I think they were first to support dual core. I'm not sure if you can confirm that, Leon.
I believe you're correct.
Yeah, and I think they're supporting dual monitors, which is, you know, a huge deal. I think Parallels kind of, you know, they were the first to market. They really made it look like a viable market, but then they kind of got, you know, screwed because VMware's got, you know, years and years of experience doing this and realized that they could port their product and make it, you know, and make a good business out of it. So really, when you look at it, you know, Parallels is kind of, you know, you kind of feel sorry that they had to end up going up against VMware when they really did do the innovation to start that, you know, that market.
Yeah, but the truth is that VMware was on Linux since, what, 97?
Right.
It's been a long time.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it was definitely, you could tell it wasn't that hard for them to come out with the product because they did it pretty quickly. But then both of them, I believe, have a feature that some people like. I actually don't use it. I don't know if Leon uses it, but I think it's called Unity on VMware. I don't remember what it's called on Parallels, but basically it's so you can run. What's that?
It's like Cohesion or something.
Yeah, Cohesion maybe, yeah.
I'll look it up.
But basically the feature in both of them allows you to run Windows like a, you know, you could run Visual Studio and it looks like it's a Mac window. Like you can move it around in your Mac environment. To me, it just always looks kind of Frankenstein, so I would just rather keep them separate and, you know, have Visual Studio in my VM and have my Mac apps on my Mac and be done with it.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a second. So Unity allows you to, like, for example, Alt-Tab, and you would see Visual Studio in the Alt-Tab window?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, and then whenever you go into develop, you would actually be writing inside of Visual Studio. But, of course, it's not going to look like the Mac. It's going to look like a Windows app. So that's what you mean by the Frankenstein comment.
Yeah, it looks like a floating Windows app on your Mac. Okay. Which really just now, makes Windows look worse when it's floating on top of OS X.
Oh, it's ugly.
Okay, so in order to do that, though, on Unity, you still have to boot the virtual machine. You just don't, like, launch Visual Studio by itself, though.
Right. I mean, you actually do if you go look in the virtual machine. Visual Studio is still launched. It's basically just how it shows you those windows. Instead of opening up the virtual machine, you see them, you know, in OS X instead of in the virtual machine.
But it did physically... So I guess what I'm confusing is you had to physically boot the virtual machine, and then you can use Unity to move the windows around. It's not like an experience to where you can drag or put a Visual Studio icon on the desktop for Mac and then launch that directly.
I think you,
no, you can.
Yeah, you can do that, but it is it's booting the VM in the background, though. I mean,
yeah, the VM will always be running when that program is running. But Unity allows you to say, take Visual Studio and put it in your dock. And anytime you launch the dock, it'll boot the VM for you, log you in, and log
so
in.
So instead of taking
user.
10 seconds to launch, it'll take 10 minutes to start then.
Right. It's all kind of magician tricks, though. I mean, it's, you know.
Pretty
it's
fast.
Like, but, it, I mean, like, with I just suspend my VM 90% of the time, so it starts up pretty quick.
Yeah, I actually, I don't usually use Unity. What I'll end up doing is, because I'm on Leopard, I'll use a different space for my VM. So I always have it running in the like the top left space, and then if I want to switch over to Mac, I'll just tab over to another space, and then I'm in the Mac.
See, I normally, I work with, I have a like a external monitor and then my laptop, and I always use the PC on the external monitor. So that's like my PC, and then my Mac's to the left.
Fancy.
Yeah, that's... You're one of the cool kids.
I think you have to have an external monitor now if you're a developer. Otherwise, you lose major points, right?
A lot of it.
It's like 50 geek points, I think, for that, right?
Oh, no.
So all this talk about you guys switching over to the Mac, I mean, how long did it take you guys to get comfortable with the Mac, with the hardware, with the OS X, and just get up to speed?
I'm actually still in the process of doing that just because you kind of forget how much you get used to Windows. I mean, I used Windows for, you know, 15 years. You just get used to where stuff is or if something goes wrong, what you do. And basically, I'm still kind of picking up that stuff on OS X. I think part of the reason it's taking me a little longer is because I do so much of my work in Windows that I don't have to figure out as much stuff in OS X until I have a problem or maybe I'm doing some Rails work or something like that.
You know, that's kind of reminds me of a story. I was, whenever I had a Mac years ago, this was back when Macs, you know, like you've heard people say, you know, I was country when country wasn't cool. Well, I had a Mac when Mac wasn't cool back then. But I actually had an OS X machine. It was a Mac G4 867, had a couple of gigs of memory in it. And I was running VMware with Windows XP at the time to boot into that to do some things. And I would literally, I've been doing stuff in like Linux for so long and Windows, I would try to do it in the Mac, and I would literally bang my head against the wall like, why is this so hard? And then I'd figure it out, and I'm like, oh, that was easy. But I had to think completely differently to do it on the Mac. I think that's the big shift for people, is the actual thinking differently.
For me, especially given my target audience when I got my first Mac, the barrier was power users for Windows, people who knew where everything in Windows was and then tried to translate that knowledge to their new Mac, or especially OS X, had issue. Whereas my wife, who was not really a power Windows user, she took to it like a duck to water, and she had no problem whatsoever from day one figuring things out. In fact, I was always going to her and saying, well, wait a minute, how do I do this? And she actually knew before I did.
Can you think of an example we ran into with that?
I'm trying to remember. Small things like when you have a window open, say like an Explorer window in Windows, and you want to select multiple things, and you can click and drag, or you can just shift click one and then shift click the end. Well, doing that in the Mac is actually just literally, if you have one highlighted, you can just start dragging and start picking up all of the items very simply. And I was looking for some key combination that didn't exist to do something that all I had to do was click and drag for.
I can remember my wife one time, she wanted to print a document. She had a little iBook I'd bought her. It's like, I want to print this document. She was so used to Windows. And I just said, well, just take the document that's on your desktop and drag and drop it on the printer. And she's like, no, it can't be that simple. I'm like, just drag and drop the document onto the printer. And which I think you can do it in Windows too, but, you know, because the printer icon is on the desktop, unlike Windows, it's kind of hidden, you know. It's kind of off in the space somewhere.
I had the same issue with installation. I couldn't figure out how to install the applications where the disk image shows up on the desktop in OS X, and you open it up, and it's like, so Firefox is the best example. So I download Firefox, the Firefox window, the disk image window opens for the first time, and it's in a Finder window. And what you see is the Firefox application icon, and then a giant arrow that's pointing to a shortcut of your application's directory. So that's kind of like the program files directory in Windows. And nothing else. No README, no anything. I didn't know what to do with it. I was like, do I just...
It's just the icon sitting, you know, just the icon sitting there.
Just the icon. So I said, well, maybe I just click this. And if you double-click it, it actually launches Firefox just from wherever that disk image is sitting. And so I couldn't quite figure that out. And then it just occurred to me, oh, it's literally just drag this into my applications directory, and it's installed. And the same thing happened when you want to uninstall. You're supposed to just drag it into the trash. None of that made any sense to me, and I had to go out on the internet and try and figure that out and understand why.
Where's the installer? I want to hit next five times.
That's right. I need a wizard. If there's no wizard, how am I supposed to live?
How can I install it? What about you, James? Do you have any weird moving from Windows to Mac stories?
I'll tell you one thing that still doesn't make any sense to me is when you want to burn a disk, you copy everything to the disk, and then you drag it to the trash. That does not make any sense. Basically, dragging it to the trash starts it to burn it. So that's like the eject. If you want to eject a disk, you drag it to the trash. That doesn't make any sense to me. And that I picked it up and I do it now, but it still doesn't make any sense as a, you know, analogy for or a metaphor that you're going to throw the disk away to burn it. That doesn't make sense.
It's almost as bad as having to press start to shut down
right,
in Windows.
Right. And then I think like one of the other things that really takes a lot of getting used to is on a on Windows, we've gotten used to, you know, you go turn off all the buttons to hide stuff from you so you can see all the files and you're used to all the files. But, you know, like we're talking about the little Firefox icon, you can go look inside that, you know, package and it's like thousands of files. So you gotta kinda get used to the different things to turn on and off to really see what you want to see.
Yeah, because those actual icons that Leon was talking about with like Firefox is actually a directory called .application.
Right, and that just looks like a package. And then there's like all kinds of Unix files that get hidden from you as well that you've got to learn how to show those. And if you want to do, you know, some more Unix type stuff,
I can't imagine what it would be like for somebody like you, James, that was a Windows guy. Who didn't have much Unix experience? I don't think you did.
No,
you?
I'm.
And then moving to the Mac.
No, it's definitely been interesting, but I'm really enjoying it. I mean, I used Linux somewhat in the past, just enough to, you know, like I could push out a website on a Linux server, but other than that, you know, not much. And so it's been a huge learning experience of picking all that up and, you know, deploying, you know, more complex applications on Linux. And I mean, but it's been great.
So guys, you know what? I listen to you, and I get about 80% of what you're talking about, but I'll tell you the truth. In my whole life, I've probably been on a Mac less than 20 hours. And most of that's at my brother's house. He's kind of a Mac snob, and he's had the what was the Mac where it had, like, the round base and the monitor on, like, the metal
arm?
That was one of the iMacs,
yeah.
Yeah, so he had one of those. I thought it was really attractive looking, but I started using it a little bit, and I just couldn't get it. And, you know, I did do about 7 years of Linux development, and I'll tell you the truth, the OS X or OS X operating system is nothing like my experience from the Linux days. I was a big GNOME user, and I used KDE a little bit. So and those kept primarily the Windows kind of metaphor for the OS, but I do like the Mac, and you guys are really tempting me to maybe, if I could get some scratch together, some extra dough, to go out and get one just to try it out.
Well, I had one Woody for a long time. I mean, I still have it. Mine is just older, and I can't run all this new stuff, and I'm trying to talk people at work to try to give me one, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I heard you were a huge Mac fan for a while. So what happened that made you go into Windows instead of sticking with a Mac? I get to interview the interviewer now.
Interview the interviewer. Well, I was working in an enterprise environment, and I moved from doing sort of what I call open source development, James, into enterprise development. And if you're in the enterprise and you're supporting 5,000 desktops and as many servers as we have, you're pretty much doing .NET development. And so you're a small frog in a big pond doing stuff with a Mac. I mean, I started out at the company I work for now with a Mac with two 20-inch monitors with dual processors. Back then would be G4 processors, writing PHP code, and then migrated into .NET. And I've been really happy with .NET. I love the programming tools of the platform. I think it's really great. But, you know, just like Leon said earlier, you don't talk about a confused soul. I was doing .NET development at work, going home, playing on my Mac, and then three nights a week going and teaching Linux classes at a college for certification. So you don't talk about a confused soul. I'm your man, you know.
Oh, but, that's not confusion. You know, that's bliss.
That is bliss. Well, it was very confusing for me to stay on top of all three platforms at all time. So, but basically, you know, when you're in a big pond like that, you've got to, you know, follow the tools that help support that. You know, I think somebody said earlier, it's like using the right tool for the job. Well, that was the right tool for the job.
I mean, first of all, I think that's great. I think the diversity of platform that you were doing, I think that's something that I think a lot of people in the .NET could benefit from. I think it's easy, especially when you're kind of strapped down into the enterprise, to get myopic and only do things in a certain way, like the .NET way. If anything, changing or at least having kind of this dual citizenship in two different platforms has informed the way that I develop on all of those platforms. I've brought, you know, some of the things that I've learned in the .NET world over to the Ruby world and vice versa. And the same thing with like user experience, like knowing what a good user experience really is a little easier to understand when you've had a comparison of a bad user experience with a good user experience. Now, that's loaded. I'm not saying that, you know, the Mac experience is 100% is good and the Windows experience is 100% bad. I'm just saying that you can see when you have something to juxtapose it with, just what stands out as good and what stands out as something that could be better.
Well, I think what's interesting is we, like you were talking about, Keith, with working with all these different platforms, is that really right now the Mac is the best way to do that, interestingly enough. I mean, if you want to do, you know, I know guys who would, they did Java by day, they did a little bit of .NET here and here, and then they would, you know, do Ruby at night. And with Mac, you can, you know, you can do Java and Ruby in Mac OS, and then you can go right, you know, to a VM and do .NET development. You really don't have that option on a PC. You can't really virtualize Mac OS. So, I mean, that's really kind of, that's another reason why going with a Mac is really the only way to get that diversity where you can do any of those.
Yeah, it's their one selling point, right? They got to hold on to that one as long as they can.
So going back to the comfortable question, guys, how long did it really take you to get comfortable to where you were on the Mac? I mean, you both were kind of jumped into it. So how long did it really take you before you really got comfortable in terms of, okay, I know where things are at, I know where this is at, and I know how to do X, Y, and Z? Let's start with James.
I'm still learning every day. I mean, to get ready for this podcast, I had to install the lame encoder, and I had to go figure out how to do that, you know, because it wasn't, you know, a one-click installer kind of download. I had to figure out how I had to get that encoder. So, I mean, I still pick up and learn stuff every day. I wouldn't say I'm 100% comfortable yet, but, I mean, it took years to get that way on a PC, so.
Leon?
For me, I'd say that I felt like I owned it, like I had mastery over it about 6 months to a year into it. Like, it took a while. So I felt, oh, I know where I'm going here. I know where I'm going there. You know the best applications that all the Mac guys are talking about and why they're important. There's a lot of applications that people in the community, in the Mac community, are talking about. Hey, this is the best app that since sliced bread. You got to have it. One that comes to mind is Quicksilver. And people don't Quicksilver is like the jack of all trades app for Mac, but what most people just see it as is like a program launcher. Well, it does that and so much more. But I didn't really understand that until I started understanding what my Mac did, what it had under the covers, what it had to offer. And once I started knowing those things, I could take advantage of advice from the community, the apps that were there, the apps that weren't there, the apps that need to be built, stuff that has really helped me not only professionally but personally as well.
So, guys, so we've been talking about all this stuff, the great side of Mac and how it can be used to bring diversity to your development and kind of your programming experience. But tell me some stuff that isn't so rosy. So tell me the gotchas.
No, it's perfect.
Easy answer. All right, next question. No, there's got to be something out there.
I do think
something that's not rosy that you guys.
I'd say over like I basically got the same install when I started about a little bit under a year ago. I think I do think a little bit of like Mac rot is starting to set in with all the apps I've installed. So I think there's a reinstall in my future. So I think you still kind of get that with a Mac, just if you install too much stuff and mess around with it too much. Of course, it could be because I don't know what I'm doing that I'm messing it up. But I do think there's a little bit
of
Mac rot
app
going
zapper?
On. I do have AppZapper, but I only got it about 3 months ago. There's about 6 months of cruft still left.
Of cruft that you have to get rid of. Yeah, check into AppZapper's the cleansing of services and stuff that's hidden away from like your applications directory. That for me was night and day. It went out there and killed a bunch of stuff that was really hosing my machine for a little bit.
Oh, very cool. I'll try.
What is that called?
AppZapper.
AppZapper. Yep.
It's basically
AppZapper.
It's like
so
an,
just
it's a,
goes through and cleans.
It's like
up
an uninstaller.
Yeah, it's like an uninstaller. Right. Oh, it's a great uninstaller. And in fact, I really wish that people at Apple would just buy that damn thing and put it on the OS natively, because it is the missing application. And anybody I recommend who buys a Mac, that's the first $10 I tell you to go spend is to buy. Go to appzapper.com, get AppZapper. It's wonderful.
Well, and I will tell you something that I was kind of surprised by. I didn't expect moving to a Mac is that I think I've spent more money on applications since moving to a Mac than I did in a PC. And I don't know if that's partially because, I get an MSDN subscription and stuff like that, so I don't have to pay for that. But there seems to be lots of little utilities that on a Mac, that really the best thing out there you need to buy, like AppZapper, like Transmit, like TextMate, like, Ecto and stuff like
and
that.
And I think the pricing, I would agree with you, James, and I would say that the pricing, the interesting thing is the pricing for these apps, for the value that they provide, tends to be generally lower than I've noticed lower than, say, a Windows alternative. So I feel a little easier about going and saying, oh, $10, I'll throw $10 at that.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. But I do think on Windows, there's a lot more just like kind of free crap out there. And a lot of it is crap, but it's free. So you don't necessarily need to buy something. I mean, there's there's plenty of free FTP tools that you can download on Windows. But really, there's a couple free ones on Mac, but really Transmit is just so much better than all of them. You've got to buy it. And like TextMate, it's like, Notepad 2 is great. On Windows, it's free, but for a Mac, you've got to buy TextMate. I'm sure there's tons of free ones out there. I could go use, VI or whatever. But, there's ones out there that you just got to get. They're native Mac apps. And, you drop $20 here, $30 here. Kind of the first 6 months of owning it, you just see all these little $20, $30 charges on your Amex from, owning a Mac. But it's great. I mean, they're great applications.
Hey, guys, so you guys don't really have any good free software recommendations? Not free as in open source, but free as in just free little utilities? There really isn't any out there for the
free as in
for
beer.
Your,
free as in beer. Yeah, there's a lot of free as in beer apps. Komodo Edit is out there. That's for free. I'd have to open up my applications directory, but I'm pretty sure there's
Adium. Adium's a huge one because that's basically your IM client. So you can talk to any IM. It's free. It's perfect. It's got this cute little duck that's the icon. I mean, you can't beat that.
It's great. Skype is free, of course. There's a lot that are there. There's a very large open source community that is attached to Mac, and they are doing great. Quicksilver was another one.
That's a free one. But I do think that one of the nice things is that in Mac there is, I think, a healthier, small, like ISV kind of software market. Like if you write a good native Mac app to do something like FTP, you can sell it and make a pretty good amount of money. Whereas on Windows, that's a little bit harder to do.
You know what I noticed whenever I was doing the Mac is just like you guys, I would spend $10 here, $20 there, and so on and so forth for those little bitty small utilities. But they were always so very polished. I mean, they were always like it was like somebody had built it at an actual company and put all this time and energy into it. They were just very, very polished. It's different from like getting a utility that looks like it was just thrown together as first person server .NET app that they
right.
wrote, you know? It's a different
I would say that,
mindset, I guess.
Yeah, it is definitely a mindset. And I think I think the Mac guys will have to take this in the spirit in which it's intended. But they can be a little snobby when it comes to their user experience. So I've seen apps that I thought were totally passable, but because it didn't have a dock-appropriate icon, it would get lambasted on the internet for being just horribly under-designed and a poor experience. So they take that very, very seriously.
Well, I think it's easy to get that way. Just using OS X, you're used to these apps look really nice, and then if you open one that is just ugly, you know, you're just like, I don't want to open this, you know. I don't want to deal with it. I'll pay $20 and get a really nice-looking good one that works well.
Okay, guys, so let's talk about this. Who is this setup not made for? Who would you say that, you know, like if somebody comes to you and says, I'm looking at getting a Mac, I'm doing .NET development, or I'm doing .NET development, what would you tell people, or what would make you tell people, hey, don't do what I'm doing?
Well, I think if you have to integrate into your enterprise, if your enterprise does not have the infrastructure set up to have Macs network seamlessly with the rest of your network, that's possibly an area. It can be done, and it can be done pretty simply, but it does take work and knowledge on behalf of your network and system administrators. That, to me, is probably one of the biggest barriers for entry. It doesn't have things like native Exchange support. That's coming in Snow Leopard. So there are some things to consider. So if you just wanted to get a Mac, maybe a MacBook Pro, hook it up to your network and have it just work, sometimes it doesn't work that well. On the other hand, I don't necessarily know if that's too big a barrier for entry. If you do love your Mac, you can, using some of the techniques we've already described, turn it into Windows when you need it to definitely be Windows.
So you could just walk into the office, turn on your VM with Windows, and sit down and use your Mac, but then the network guys think you're using Windows.
Yeah, or boot right into it and just have, you know, natively, bang, you're just using, you are, for all intents and purposes, a Windows machine in the network, if they're cool to sync that up to the network, and done and done. I think James said it earlier, it's hard to kind of look at a negative when the real positive here is that it's still Windows. If you're a .NET developer, if you're a native Windows, MFC developer, you can still have a Mac. You just have to boot over into Windows when you want to do it, and that's something that you can't do on Windows. You can't just boot over to the Mac. So if you were, you know, say you're a Windows mobile developer, and you've got this great mobile app that you've done for Windows mobile handhelds, and you want to create an iPhone version, well, that's either going to necessitate another computer entirely to build that app, or you just get a Mac from day one, and then you can build both.
I mean, I would say that a big part of it is if you're really interested in learning and trying new things. If you're the guy in the office who, when a new technology comes out, you go to your IT person and say, we need training on this, then a Mac's probably not for you, because you're going to have to learn a ton of stuff if you're going to use OS X, if you're going to explore stuff. But if you're the kind of guy who wants to try out Rails or try out Python and play with different stuff, I mean, then that, you know, I mean, I think it's great.
So, guys, do you have any problems once you've set up your VM inside Mac to use certain things in your project? Is there any gotchas once you get that VM up and running, maybe some machine-dependent issues with your .NET projects?
This is Leon. I personally have not run into any. I will say that if you're using VMware on the Windows and on your Mac, then you're going to have a very seamless experience. But if you're using Virtual PC, which I've been using on Windows for a very long time, you're going to have to run the converter to get it to run that same image on your Mac. That could be a real concern. So you might want to, if you know you're going to introduce virtualization and you know you're going to do it cross-platform, I would definitely look at a provider or a solution provider that will work with that story.
What kind of reaction do you get, James? I mean, you're a Microsoft MVP. You're carrying around this MacBook Pro, and you're speaking at different conferences. What kind of reaction do you get out there from people?
I think some people are initially shocked, but I also think that there's a lot more people doing it, so it's starting to be a little more accepted, depending on where you go. Like, I was at a user group meeting recently, and a couple people were like, you know, you use a Mac? And it's like, yeah, you know, but then I boot up, and it looks like Windows, and, you know, I'm just running my VM and, you know, full screen, so you can't even tell it's a Mac. And, I mean, people kind of, I think they're a little wary at first. They don't really understand why you would use a Mac. But you normally explain it to them, and some people, you know, get it, and some people don't. But then also you get the other reaction. Like, I was actually went to, I'm a consultant, and one of the clients, I went into their office and I had my Mac, and the guys were like, oh, you use a Mac? That's awesome. You know, I've been looking at getting one. I want to get one. How does it work? You know, can you use VMware? Does it work? You know, does it work well? And, you know, and then you kind of show it off and do the dog and pony show. So you kind of get two different reactions of the, you know, the people who maybe are a little more, you know, blue-blooded Microsoft people. They're, you know, not sure why you would use it. And then, you know, other people are just way interested in learning what you do and how you do it.
Yeah, there's one thing I've never really understood, and that's people, especially who don't necessarily work for Apple or for Microsoft, developing this kind of zealotry for whatever platform they're currently using. I get the same reactions that you guys have, you know, a fair mix of positive and negative. But the ones that are negative are usually negative based on hype or based on some FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, and not really based on an actual use case or experience that they've had on their own. And I would say that kind of fear is the one that concerns me the most, especially when talking to developers, who I think learn more and can gain much more mastery over their current domain by reaching out to others.
You can find that pretty much anywhere, though, Lee. I mean, you can go to any Linux users group in the nation and walk in, and if you've got a Windows machine, you boot it up, they're all going to snarl at you.
Yeah, no, I agree.
You can walk into a Mac user group and boot up, you know, Linux, and they'll all snarl at you. I mean, you can pretty much go anywhere you want. People are going to have that sort of...
Basically,
I couldn't agree more. Go ahead, James.
I was just going to say, basically, it's the fanboy syndrome, right? I mean, it's arguing over Nintendo versus Xbox versus PS3. It's any time that people form some sort of connection to a company and they become like a, you know, zealot or fanboy, and you find that everywhere.
And I think that justification always comes at the – I'm sorry. I feel like that justification always comes at an emotional cost, and that emotional cost is completely worthless. So I think if you're interested in trying it, try it. Don't care what other people are thinking. See, if it has value for you, then it has value for you. Same thing with you Linux guys, too. Like, if you fire up Ubuntu, good on you.
I think it's all driven by a fear of being wrong. Because, you know, a .NET developer doesn't want to see you with a Mac and think, oh, I'm wrong, I put 10 years into a PC. But it's really not that big of a deal if you're wrong. If you're wrong, you just fix it and you move on. I mean, if you put years into something, you have that experience, you know, it doesn't matter. It's like, you know, people, that's like kind of the kickback against Rails, is that, you know, lots of people are anti-Rails because they don't want to think what they're doing is wrong. But, you know, maybe Rails is wrong. Who knows? But, you know.
I mean, I've had the same conversations with people that were, whenever I started moving from, you know, Linux and my Mac and moving into .NET platform, I had those same people go, why are you even remotely considering doing stuff in .NET? And I went, dude, the platform is really good. It solves a lot of problems. For building applications, it's great. It's fantastic. I can do things faster in this environment than I can any other. And you go talk to those people, they don't want to hear it. Microsoft is evil. But really, they're not. And, you know, we're all .NET developers for the most part. It's just three of us on a Mac. Two of us are actually using it every day. And so at least me and Woody basically just... sitting over here by ourselves, twiddling our thumbs. But, I mean, everybody here has written .NET code. I think we would all, taking a poll, we would all say we'd love the platform. We like what it does as a developer.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
agreed. Exactly. I'm not willing to give it up at all. I'm frequently speaking about SharePoint development, which is something that there's not a lot of people talking about. And the number one question I always get when I'm back at the bar is, why do you even do this? It's so difficult to develop for. It's such a problem, such a headache. And I say, well, it works for me. I mean, I have no problem with it. I've been able to be profitable and enjoy it, and I've worked on it no problem. Doesn't matter if you don't like it. It only matters that I like it, and I have value, and I can bring customers value with it.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't affect your delivery of your software back to your clients.
No, the right tool for the job. I mean, that's just it. If you tried a Mac at one point and it didn't work for you, then that's great. And usually that's the person that doesn't have a lot of venom when they say they didn't like it. They just say, oh, yeah, well, I tried it. It sucked. It wasn't for me.
I really appreciate you guys talking to us, kind of giving us the lowdown of the Mac horizon. But if you were to recommend three tools to a new person like myself, if I went out and bought a new iBook or a MacBook, what three tools would you recommend that I buy like 20 minutes after I open the box?
I would say starting with VMware Fusion, of course, because you're going to have to do .NET development. And then I love TextMate, which is just a simple text editor. And then there's a lot of the other there's a lot of other ones that are great. It's hard to pick a third. I'd say definitely Adium if you're going to do – I mean, obviously, IM, chat. But then, of course, there's the whole Adobe suite, which is great.
Okay, so I'm going to try and pick ones that aren't in that list because I say all of those are must-buys or must-downloads if they're free. But in addition to those, I love 1Password. That's the number one followed by password, and that's a universal password protection lockdown system, but it works across every browser on the Mac too, so you can take all of your passwords everywhere you go. It's fantastic. Quicksilver, I've mentioned it before, I'll mention it again, is another great one. And then the last one is, you're a developer, I recommend pulling down Xcode, which will also bring down things like Interface Builder and all of the other tools. If you're looking, I know there's a lot of buzz over on the .NET side about the new ASP.NET MVC implementation. And if that's your only view of an MVC implementation, take a look at Cocoa. Cocoa does MVC very well, and it will really inform the actual meme of what an MVC is doing and how it should do it. And it'll directly apply to what you're doing and what you're learning over on the ASP.NET side.
Well, very interesting conversation with you guys. I mean, you guys are .NET developers. You own Macs. You get a lot of stares. A lot of people don't know what to think about you. You're on the cutting edge. And I think it's a really interesting conversation. This is a kind of a unique conversation, I guess, to have. I don't think anybody else has had this conversation publicly. It's been had in the bar, I know, a lot, you know, in a lot of different areas, but hasn't actually been a public recording of it. So
one thing I did want to mention, I think is interesting, is that I do hear lots of .NET developers going this route. I mean, I know Telligent, the company Leon works at, like a ton of those guys are going this route now. And I just think it's really interesting to see how it seems to be kind of viral in that, you know, I think, you know, Chris is going to have a Mac in a couple weeks, and then Keith will be buying a new one. And, you know, everyone you talk to and touch seems to start going this way.
Actually, I need to buy a new machine within the next 2 months, and my wife will kill me, but it may have to be a MacBook.
I think the thing is that people have to really understand or get out of this conversation that I want people to get out of it is that once you go down the rabbit hole of virtualizing your development, it doesn't matter what operating system you host it on then. So if you're not willing to virtualize your development and go down that rabbit hole, probably the Mac is not going to be the best thing for you if you're doing .NET development. But if you're doing .NET development, you're already virtualizing your machines and virtualizing your development. You are now a perfect candidate to probably go look at a different operating system that makes you more happy or that makes you feel good in your own. Whether that's, you know, maybe it's Ubuntu Linux, if you want to run that, that's fine. Use VMware, host your .NET development in that. Or if it's a Mac or if it's Windows Server 2008, whatever it is. I think that's the big takeaway here, guys.
I definitely agree. I mean, if you think you want to go this route, the first thing I'll do is go buy a VMware workstation for the PC, because it's good to have anyway, and do all of your development in that for a couple months. And if you hate it, then you're going to hate running on a Mac, if you're still going to do lots of .NET development. So, I mean, I think you're definitely right that once you virtualize and you go down that route, it really doesn't matter if you're running it on Mac, Linux, PC, whatever.
Yeah, I'd even say that if it's something you're even remotely interested in but are totally afraid of and don't necessarily want to commit financially to it, virtual PC is for free. So you can download virtual PC from Microsoft today, load up an operating system, any operating system into it, any Windows operating system into it, and just start developing on it, see what you think. It's really great.
See if it works for you, and if it does and you're happy with it, then you open up more options. But if it doesn't, then it doesn't matter, really.
Yep.
All right, guys. Well, I appreciate you coming
Thanks.
On the
hey,
show. Really enjoyed the conversation. It's really interesting.
Thank
yeah,
you.
I
Thank
do
you.
Too. Thanks, guys.
Well, I certainly enjoyed today's show. Appreciate our guests coming on. James and Leon, thanks for giving up your time today. Woody, it was a pleasure to talk to you again as well.
Oh, always a pleasure on my side.
We want to thank our sponsor, Redgate, for sponsoring the show again. Look, guys, if you haven't checked out their Ants Profiler, you really need to do it. This is Keith Elder saying go check it out, because once you do, you won't do .NET development without it. It's an outstanding tool.
And Redgate also has a lot of great SQL tools. So this is Woody. And I am making you guys go out and try their SQL tools.
So go to our website, click on the link from the website itself, or it doesn't do us any good to show that we're doing anything for our sponsor. So go out and do that for us. All right, guys, Deep Fried Bites is out. We'll see you.
See you guys. Bye.